We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Quiz. We start with a road sign spotted on the Powys Shropshire border, read by Susan Ray.
Manure, £1 a bag. Pick your own, 50p.
And our thanks to Anne Harcourt for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Ramesh Ranganathan. Opposite them on my left, Katie Brand and Kevin Day. Jeremy, listen to this. Sell-off did not get a stamp of approval this week.
Royal Mail. Well, some of us said it would come to no good. Vince Cable was determined. He looked a bit shifty about it at the time. He's now... Everyone hates Vince. He was the Lib Dem that people liked. And he's got that real anger to him now because he knows he's in the wrong. He knows he shouldn't have sold it. He knows he's got a mistake, but he won't admit it. And he's got the belligerence you only see in a man who knows he's wrong but won't back down. Well, I wouldn't have crashed the car if we hadn't been driving to see your parents. Talking about the price. Well, the price was settled because he got in some bankers to advise him, and they said, you know what, sell it off really cheap to people like, oh, I don't know, bankers maybe. And he said, oh, if you're sure. And they said, yeah, that'd be a great idea. And one of the banks was Lazard, and one of the people who works for Lazard is Mandelson, who tried to privatise it under the Labour government. And so he got a core of investors, and they promised him that they wouldn't immediately sell their shares to hedge funds. And they would, and that's just like asking Eric Pickles to hold your pasty while you go to the lab, isn't it? Everyone's saying it was undervalued, but that isn't really the point. I mean, the point is it was ours. And all these people are saying, oh, I've got a share. You know the sort of people who've bought shares, the sort of petty bourgeois phalangists who listen to Moneybox. Oh, I'm lucky I own a bit of the Royal Mail. Well, before you owned all of it.
Since the privatisation, they've laid off 1,600 staff. First-class stamps gone up by 2p, second-class by 3p. Postman Pat's tried to kill himself twice because they've taken his uniform away and given him a sweatshirt and a high-vis vest. And yet it's still called a success. Because all the papers are trying to give you statistics about what we could have done with the money. We could have paid the entire wage bill for every nurse in the country for a year. The Sun said we could have had 37.5 million bingo nights out with that money. If that's still not getting people on these streets, we'll never have a revolution in this country.
Don't you, that the taxpayer could have had better value if they'd sold it on eBay? Mind you, difficult to work out the postage for the... that was the bit I find
Do you
difficult.
Think they asked the Queen, bearing in mind that it is a picture on it? Like,
doesn't she own her own image? I mean, you'd think she'd have like copyright over that.
Yeah. Even when they put an image of Rihanna on a T-shirt at Topshop, she managed to sue them.
I think she only owns image rights for that side of her face.
Do you, on a stamp, yeah. Looking at you through the letter.
Also, it's like the photographs of newspaper columnists. Looks like a 25-year-old man. If you see him in real life, you have to stop yourself going, Jesus, was there a fire? But basically, that's a Queen when she was, what, 30, 35? Still a good-looking woman. You'd lick the back of that.
So if you were looking as to how this programme's going to be edited, that would be...
There's a quote about the new pound coin, about the Queen on the new pound coin, where they said that she would be on the head side, as usual.
Yeah.
Sort of, well, yeah, sort of as expected. I wasn't expecting to see the Queen's tail on the other side.
She's very careful not to show that.
Yeah. Really?
That's why she never wears a miniskirt on a state visit.
A report from the National Audit Office says that undervaluing the Royal Mail cost the taxpayer £750 million on the first day of the sell-off last October. The £750 million that was lost could have covered either the annual salary of 34,000 NHS nurses or the shortfall from Maria Miller's expenses mistake. The government spent over £12 million on fees to bankers, but what a lunch that was. 2 points to Jeremy. Ramesh, who has been criticised for his terrible twos plan.
Well, it's the head of Ofsted, Sir Michael Wilshaw, has suggested that because children from poorer backgrounds are being failed by early years and nurseries and things like that, and that's leading to them having lower attainment, he's suggested that we need to have schooling from the age of two. And that means that they will be taught how to hold a pen, how to write their name and do basic numeracy from a very early age. I've got two children, and you know, my four-year-old is a lovely young boy, and the two-year-old is feral. And my concern is I wouldn't want him going to school. I try and keep him hidden away as much as possible. Until we get to a point where we feel like we've civilised him sufficiently. Now, they do a 2.5-year-old checkup, and they weigh the child and check that they're developing mentally and properly in all of those ways. And we were concerned about my second son going, had it a few days ago. And I was out and I texted my wife to say, how did he get on? And she said he absolutely lost his mind. they couldn't conduct the test. And now they've had to reschedule it at our house. Because that's the only way they feel that they can properly...
You refused to be weighed, or what happened?
Well, but they didn't even do the first test. Apparently, they just put some bricks out for him to play with as, like, a preamble.
Yeah.
And then that just offended him in some way. He completely flipped out. My issue with this is, Ofsted scare me. I used to be a teacher. I was a maths teacher, and I wasn't a very good one. And as long as Ofsted weren't there, it didn't matter. You can just get on with things, but then Ofsted pop in. You've got an inspector sitting in your back of your class, and suddenly you've got to look like you're doing the job properly. Do you know what I mean? You've got, you're sort of doing learning outcomes, being really nice, and sort of going, "Hey, kids, so we're going to be covering this today." No, that's great. No, I know you're throwing stuff. That's part of the learning process. Great. No, that's really good. And then a kid would put his hand up, and you say, yes, what's the problem? And he'd go, "Why are you being weird?"
I think it's way too... I mean, we have a much more relaxed attitude in Denmark. Children don't go to school until they're five. They write their first detective story by 10. By 15, they're peddling Lego on the streets. It's...
I genuinely love children. I love being in the company of children. I love their passion, their enthusiasm, their imagination, their excitement, their energy. So sending a child to school to stifle that at the age of two is just beggar's belief. But if it keeps the little gits out of restaurants...
Yeah.
I'm all for it.
I think that children in the UK are falling behind in terms of international standards. I do think that's true. I mean, I don't know if you've seen a British toddler trying to make trainers, but they haven't got a clue. It's...
There is a serious issue, but testing them isn't. Just shouting, "Come on, why did Jack go up the hill? Come on, we need the grade. Come on, get up."
I mean, what would they even ask them? That's the bit I don't understand.
Why have you woken me up this early, you little shit?
It's a bit young for structured learning, aren't they? I mean, surely kids learn masses just by paying attention without anyone... No one taught me to speak English. I learned to speak English with no lessons in 2 years... And since then, it's taken me another 51 years to learn to say, "Dos cervezas, por favor."
It's the same thing with potty training, though. You know, like, you've never met anyone that's gone, "Well, I was just never... I was just never potty trained as a child, now I just poo where I sit."
I don't know, if you go into some pubs on a Friday night, though, into the toilet, you would wonder...
A group of 235 academics and nursery leaders have written to the Daily Telegraph in response to the head of Ofsted, Sir Michael Wilshaw's suggestion that all children should start school at two. The expert group warned that the approach is catastrophic for children's mental health. Unlike their more privileged counterparts, education experts are worried poorer children don't know how to hold a pen, which knife to use with salmon, or where even to start when gutting a pheasant. I have to say, if my kids had started school at two, my chimney sweep business would never have got off the ground. 2 points to Romesh. Katie, who wants to make unemployment redundant?
This is our esteemed Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne. And it's great news, because as far as I can tell, he is going to give everyone a job on one of his estates, and he's finally living out his fantasy of just playing Downton Abbey. He's done the usual thing that George Osborne does, which is just say something and then walk off. he just sort of drops the bomb and just walks off. And everyone said, how are we going to do that, George Osborne? And he went, no, don't bother me now. I've got to go and dress for dinner or something. And sort of he said something vague, left one of his ministers to say something vague about how they were going to incentivise people to offer more jobs, which sounds a little bit mafia to me. But
before he came up with this, what were they doing before? Were they trying not to get full employment? Is it like, you know, that thing, you know, that bathroom shelf that you just mean to keep fixing? Was it one of those things, must get full employment, must get full, oh, I'll do it today?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that's the thing. Maybe he just woke up one morning last week and went, we should give everyone jobs.
Yeah.
and then we'll win the election.
But it can't work because you can't have full employment.
No,
because
no.
If everybody's got a job, then the unemployment clerks are out of work. The commentators are saying that it's his attempt to rectify what Norman Lamont said in around 1982, that unemployment is a fair price to pay to keep inflation down, which...
1992 it was.
Oh, was
Lamont
it?
Wasn't Chancellor in 82. That would have been your man, Geoffrey Howe, wouldn't it?
When do we start bringing facts into comedy?
He said one of his advisors was David Cameron.
Mm.
So I think it was a way of attacking Dave through a historic route. I think he's vying for... He wants to get Cameron's job.
What will happen once we get full employment? Will the immigrants come over here and steal our leisure time? Is that how it works?
I saw a definition of full employment, because obviously, as you said, you can't have everyone employed, and that is that there are jobs available for everyone that wants them. So surely the solution here is to just encourage people not to want a job.
Put everyone on 0 hours contracts, that works. Part-time people. It's just be like, you know, on the waterfront, you stand outside the dock gates with a big hook waiting to be picked by Johnny Friendly. It would be like that.
That's how we cast the news quiz, I have to say.
We have, it's a terrible cliche, we have two Polish builders who are the most delightful men, but one of them's got a slightly robust yet succinct attitude to employment in this country. He said, basically, we come over here to pick your raspberries because you can't be arsed. It's simple as that.
Shouldn't he be getting on with your loft extension?
I booked him for 4 weeks. He did the loft extension in a week and a half. I've been looking for things for him to do. Him and his mate, Lukasz and Derek, they turn up at 8 o'clock in the morning. They bring their own sandwiches, which they eat while they're working. And a couple of weeks ago, he said to me, you write comedy and do comedy? I went, yeah. He said, what, talk me through your normal day? I went, nah.
George Osborne has committed the Conservatives to targeting full employment, rejecting the idea that unemployment was a price worth paying for low inflation. The Tories have a good record of getting people back to work, with dozens of Lib Dems having jobs for the first time in years. The announcement is a rejection of Norman Lamont's famous declaration that unemployment was a price worth paying for low inflation. It's the second most infamous phrase uttered by Lamont after, no, nothing off the eyebrows, thanks, I'm going au naturel. 2 points to Katie. Kevin, why might the NHS cost you an arm and a leg?
This is Lord Warner. He says that we should all pay, regardless of how much we earn, we should all pay £10 a month as a subscription fee to use the NHS, which can be collected by our local councils in the same way they collect our council tax. And I'm sure it won't be too long until they're saying, well, fine, but it's going to be blood in blue boxes, urine in green boxes, and we only take appendixes every second Wednesday. It's a shame he's a Labour lord, because it's just some people in this country can't get over the fact that some people are getting some stuff for free. It just seems to really aggravate them. Even though it's not free, we're paying taxes and national insurance to get this wonderful thing called the NHS. It just annoys them. They don't pay for their education. They don't pay to see the doc. I imagine they're getting sex for nothing. This can't be allowed to carry on. And it just... So people say to me, a mate said to me, well, you know, you get BT Sport. How much do you pay for that? I said, well, I'll pay £10 a month. He said, well, there you go. I said, yeah, BT Sport never, ever promised me that football would be free at the point of contact. There's no logic to it. It's something we pay for. And I'm so proud. This is what I've had cause to use the NHS a lot recently, and I'm getting more than my money's worth. I understand that. But I'm so proud of the fact that people who I don't know, for nothing, are trying to help people that I love to stay alive. And instead of them getting the credit for it, all they get is this constant sniping and people going, we've got to pay £10 a week.
Apparently the new charges, one of the things they said, it's going to fund a health MOT for everybody. I don't like the sound of that. I am not standing over a big hole while men crawl underneath my undercarriage. There.
You don't hear an obstetrician guy.
No. Or even worse, who put that in? It's
you'll never pass on the emissions.
The thing is that you sort of, you know, I'm a member of a gym and I don't use it. And so sometimes I feel bad that I've paid all that money. And I wonder if, like, you end up paying £10 a month for long enough, you eventually start thinking, well, I want to make use of that. I'm going to start driving a bit more recklessly. I think I might take up smoking. Let's just get our money's worth out of these guys. Do you know what I mean?
Could nationalise the gyms, then we wouldn't have to look at Richard Branson's gurning face out of a balloon when you go up the stairs to spend a mirthless hour on a cross trainer.
What's he done to Usain Bolt?
He bought all the gyms. It used to be called something else, and then he bought it. Virgin Active, it used to be called something like Old Mother Riley's PT Club or something. We used to go and do PT on the apparatus, and now it's full of people, like, all pleased with themselves, drinking re-energising, hydrating blue drinks and talking about protein shakes. I remember when a protein shake could get you thrown out of the gym. Nationalise the gyms, then the vast profit they make from people like Ramesh paying £40-50 a month, or me, in fact, and not going, could go to people who are ill, and that would be good.
Was it £20 a night to stay in a hospital? So it's going to be more like a hotel. I just warn you, that is not a chocolate on the pillow in a hospital.
We could just start tipping, couldn't we? Because you tip cab drivers, and so that basically you're funding their golf club membership in Romford. Instead of that, you could say, give the nurse something. There you go, girl. Smarten yourself up. Get you something nice. Your watch is upside down. You've got blood all over your frock. You know.
Do you think it would seem nicer? Do you think time of death, if it was called checkout time, would just seem a bit... Oh, and if you want a midwife, you could have a womb service. It was in the room, people. It was in the room. This week has seen a number of proposals for charging people to use the NHS. Former Health Minister Lord Warner suggested charging people £10 a month and a further £20 for every night spent in hospital. It has also been suggested that doctors' visits should cost between £10 and £25, unless you're Maria Miller, in which case you can just claim it back as a mortgage repayment on a shed. Under the proposal, patients would still receive emergency treatment if they hadn't paid the fee, which I have to say is handy, because I can't remember my PIN at the best of times, let alone if I've been hit by a bus. So 2 points to Kevin at the end of round one. The scores are Jeremy and Romesh have got 4 points, but so too have Katie and Kevin. We start round two with an instruction from the packaging of a bath mat.
Please note, when the bath mat is taken out of the wrapper, it will have two folds that will disappear when laid in a bath of hot water and stuck to the bottom.
Enough thanks to Charles Wiley for sending us that. Jeremy, why are greengrocers celebrating this week?
It was actually on April Fool's Day, this story. I thought, yeah, right. But it turned out to be true. Apparently, five a day is nowhere near enough peas to eat. You're now supposed to eat seven peas. And you're not even allowed to use honey to stick them on your knife. Because it spikes your blood sugar. Yeah, but basically they're saying that five a day, which we knew five a day is not enough, five portions of, but it was just a way of trying to nudge people into eating slightly more healthily. But they're now sort of admitting that basically you've got to mainline a courgette before you get out of bed, because we need to eat twice our own body weight in vegetables, and not fruit. Fruit's not good for you. That's all a myth. Fruit smoothies are not good for you. More people a year are killed by fruit smoothies than died in Iraq. It seems because there's too much fruit sugar straight into your bloodstream. So basically, it's kale. It's kale. We've got to eat a lot of kale, and then we will all be healthy, but mirthless.
Jeremy's right about it, because they said fruit juice in a tin is actively dangerous, which it is if you throw it at smug nutritionists. But fruit juice in a tin? I shop in Lidl. Even Lidl don't do fruit juice in a tin.
We used to, when I was a kid,
they
used
do shampoo and bacon in tins.
You used to get frozen, concentrated, tinned orange juice. And you had to open
frozen.
The tin,
that's a
tip
jubbly.
It into water and let it defrost, take it out the night before, because you'd be anticipating, the whole family would get together to have some orange juice with Sunday dinner, and then you put it in water and it would like a loofah, it would gradually sort of expand.
Can you imagine how annoyed you'd be? You've done all that and then somebody, I don't really fancy orange juice now.
And there's Kellogg's Rise and Shine we had, which was just dried orange dust.
Oh, Jeremy, how we enjoy these stories from the war.
No, but basically, fruit juice isn't good for you at
no,
all.
Well, this report also said, because they're blaming sugar for all sorts of stuff now, rather than fat, and they're saying you shouldn't really eat anything that your grandmother didn't eat. Now, which is awkward, because I know for a fact that for several years, my grandmother subsisted entirely on chocolate supplied by gratified American soldiers.
Is it just humans? Does it count for animals as well?
No, yes, as long as you eat an animal that's eaten lots of vegetables. Like, if you eat a cow most days, you're probably
but
okay.
I've seen a lot of pigs with apples in their mouths,
exactly.
And they didn't look too clever, I'm just saying. I've got a quick question. If a doctor eats an apple, does she have an existentialist crisis? Every now and then I like to bring the show back up to a Radio 4 level.
I did see a nutritionist on TV once who looked sort of beaten down and weary, and they said, do we really need 5 a day? And she sort of went, no, we need 12 a day, but we know there's no way that's ever going to happen.
But the thing is that there's no cut-off point for this, because like what they said is that you should eat 5 a day, and then now they've said it's probably better if you eat 7 a day. I mean, this could just go on forever. It's actually better if you eat 1,000 a day. But like,
I don't agree with you, Romesh. I think there must be a cut-off point, because the woman who's in charge, right, she said, the clear message here is that the more fruit and vegetables you eat, the less likely you are to die at any age. Now, I'm no doctor, OK, but eating a carrot just after you fall off a bridge, there's going to be no effect. There is a cut-off point where the vegetable is not really going to be helpful.
No, that's not... That's actually incorrect. I hate to correct you, but a carrot would make you bouncier. and you would actually be less likely to...
Also, the logic what a teacher you must have been.
But there must be a cut-off point, though, to do with the fibre in the vegetables, where you would be getting rid of more than your body can handle until you sort of almost turn yourself inside out and die that way.
I think the ideal situation is just where you're constantly feeding and evacuating.
A scientific study has found that to maintain a healthy diet, we should in fact be eating at least 7 portions of fruit and vegetables a day. There have been mixed messages in many national newspapers, with the Telegraph saying we should eat 10 portions, the Times saying 7, and the Daily Express claiming that illegal immigrants have stolen all of the apples. In Australia, government advice is 2 + 5, both in regards to fruit intake and the most difficult question in their maths A-level. 2 points to Jem. Romesh, why has a dust-up in Africa left us feeling smug?
Well, basically, this is because a warning came out this week that we were going to have the highest levels of pollution and smog, I believe, since records began. But I may have just made that up. And apparently it's because of dust from the Sahara in combination with emissions from Europe.
This is a chance to blame the Tuaregs. For years, the one minority that the British have not turned on is the Tuaregs that happily bimbling around in the Sahara with their long clothes and their world music that does well at festivals here. And people have gone there and photographed them living their nomadic yet colourful, simple but humble lives. And now we can finally hate them for mixing our diesel with sand. But apparently it's the diesel that's the worst bit. That's the particulate and stuff that's entering our lungs. The rest of it is just your car looks a bit sandy.
I can tell you that Saharan pollution is all the sand coating cars, whereas sub-Saharan is when it gets in your sandwich. That's as much as I understood from the...
There are plus sides. My Chinese neighbour, it's the first time in years he hasn't felt homesick. He's been out breathing it in. He says, lovely, it's just like home. And my dad's in his element, because basically he's had 2 days of, call this smog. We had to walk to work on top of it when I was a kid. To work in an iron lung. I wooed your mother entirely by a cough.
I want to see a constable holding a hurricane lamp on the corner and saying, it's a real pea soup of the night, ain't it?
I like it. I think it's great. You know,
do you? Why?
Because, well, one thing, you can, it legitimises wearing those masks so you can pretend you're a ninja, which is... And two, also, they're encouraging you not to go outside and walk around. I'm being told by the government that I shouldn't be exercising. This is amazing. Don't go out with your children. Quality.
Dust blown 2,000 miles from the Sahara and fossil fuel emissions this week combined to take air pollution up to very high levels in parts of the country. In February, the European Commission launched legal action over the persistent lack of UK air quality, another terrifying example of Brussels' iron grip on our nation's right to smog. A snap poll by Asthma UK has found 80% of sufferers reported using their inhalers more often. A snap poll by the British Card Game Society has found that people find it an enjoyably simple game. Where you match pairs of cards. It is quite biblical at the moment, do you not think? The plague of sand, floods, Nigel Farage popular.
Shall we have an inhaler pause?
Shall we do? Yes, I'll get mine out. We'll just have a
if anyone would like
moment.
To join us, come on, let's have an old inhale to keep our spirits up, like we used to do in the old days of the smog after the war. We'd all get together with our inhalers. We'd have a good old suck in.
You have to finish together as well.
2 points to Romesh. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Romesh have got 8 points, but so too have Katie and Kevin. We start round three with a cutting from the Guardian website.
Stuart Heritage. I owe my career to the time I spent living with my mum and dad, so no wonder nearly 50% of young Europeans do it.
OK. It's best so far. And our many thanks to Laurent Urin for sending us that.
Yeah, thanks a bunch for that. Yeah. I'll be chuckling about that all the way home. God.
Jeremy.
What?
Jeremy.
Oh, what? Questions, Sandra.
Jeremy, why might eyes be the window to your bowl?
I don't know. Why okay. might they? Why might eyes be the window to your bowl?
Do you guys know?
Yes, it's there's a report suggesting, would you believe it, that American cereal manufacturers position the eyes on the cartoon characters on boxes so they look down at a particular angle. So a kid looks up and goes, oh, there's a tiger in a bandana. How trustworthy. And they buy that. That's apparently what the cartoon characters are luring these kids in with my... And I'd... Snap, Crackle and Pop haunt me to this day. Because apparently Snap, Crackle and Pop is the sound of your breakfast in the morning. It's not the sound of my breakfast. The sound of my breakfast is... Oh. That's better.
Is the idea you bond with your cereal on the basis of being looked at directly in the eye by... So what we need to make people healthier is to have Captain Muesli with a jaunty sort of... pirate hook on the front of our Alpen.
But none of these cartoon characters are going to work for you, Jeremy. I would imagine for you, you'd need a box of fruit and fibre and there'd be a mournful middle-aged character avoiding eye contact and staring into the middle distance and you think, that's the one for me.
I do think it's sort of it's a reminder of age. You know, when you go to breakfast cereal aisle, you know, you look at all the kids' cereals and all the boxes are like red and green and blue, and there's like parrots and monkeys having a party, and they're going, "Hey man, we're eating loads of sugar. It's crazy." And then you look on the left hand side, and like every box is brown, and they've got like bowls of twigs and leaves. They haven't got an animal on the front. It's just a guy pooing without discomfort. It's, so depressing.
What do you want for grown-ups? Do you want crunchy nut porn flakes? What do
you want? I want, like, to be a bit more exciting.
I found myself in the breakfast aisle at the supermarket last week, and you know what I thought? I thought they've moved the bloody wine again. Why can they not keep it in the same place week after week after week? But also, you think this is like... Because the report implies that cereal companies are evil because they're encouraging children. What else? Bacardi Breezer, they're evil. Kids are buying far more Bacardi Breezer than cereal. They don't seem to have to put cartoon faces on it. They just put Bacardi Breezer in it. So if you want kids to buy more cereal, put Bacardi Breezer in the cereal. And have a really pissed-up aggressive tiger on the front of it. You can't tell which direction he's looking at, but you don't want to catch his eye.
academics at Cornell University have found that cereal boxes are designed so the eyes of the cartoon characters on the front catch the eye of a child. The researchers evaluated 65 types of cereal and took 4 days to calm down from the resulting sugar rush. 2 points to Jem. Kevin, who's trying to cut restaurants down to size?
Yes, it's a new government website about the size of pizzas. There's a famous story in football circles which the player concerned is happy to repeat himself. He was once offered a pizza in a restaurant and the waitress asked if he'd like it cut into 8 or 4 slices and he said, 4, please, I don't think I can manage 8. But the government have kind of imitated that. The government have voted this new website where they've given advice to pizza sellers, for example, to say, why don't you reduce your pizza by an inch to help people lose weight? To which they could add, why don't you reduce your pizza from a traditional tandoori pineapple thick crust with chorizo and cheese, which I had to take issue with somebody recently over the word traditional. In a restaurant, this traditional tandoori chicken and pineapple thick crust pizza you're offering me. But they're selling it ostensibly as a health thing. And they've said to restaurants, they've said to fish and chip shops, this is a way to cut your chips so you can use less oil, which is healthier. Reduce the size of your pizza, reduce the size of your chips, reduce the size of your portions, don't lower your prices.
It's basically with this system, the public will be getting a slightly different thing from what they initially wanted.
A slightly smaller thing than they initially wanted at the same price. And I love the fact, I'm going to quote this, because it's what I've got in my glasses. This is off from the website. And this is a note of advice to Indian restaurant owners. And it reads like advice from World War II. It says, smaller portion sizes will still be satisfying and will save you money. All right, brackets, take that fatty. But this government, in the whole we're in it together thing, there is a massive elephant in this room for the government in the shape of pickles. Eric Pickles. Right, because we're not all in it together. We're, you know, frankly, he loses weight, I'll lose weight. That's fine. I can't believe the fact that even within this advice to shops and restaurants about the health and safety of their customers, they still encourage them to make more money.
I saw a thing as well this week on this topic about there'd been some study in America about if you have a smaller plate, then you eat less, and therefore you lose weight. And there was an absolutely groundbreaking study where they had done an experiment on school children with a buffet, where they found on one day if they gave them a big plate, they took lots of food. And the next day, if they gave them a little plate, they took less food. I feel I could have saved them a lot of money and told them that.
But it doesn't work
in... You just fill up the plate to the size that you've got, don't you?
It doesn't work in sushi places because this little train thing goes round and you just get a little saucer. And you're not fooled. You don't think, I'm stuffed now. I've licked the green thing off that tiny saucer. Oh, I couldn't force another bit of weird sea vegetable down me. You just feel a bit depressed.
They're difficult, though, those, because at least when you've got a plate of food, you know when to stop eating. But when you sit in those conveyor belt sushi restaurants, I mean, you could just stay there for 4 or 5 days.
Yeah,
but
well,
you just
true.
Don't know
yeah.
when
you don't
to...
Know.
When is the meal finished? When is the meal
no, exactly.
finished?
There is a little Japanese bloke who's been in there for 48 years refusing to accept.
I do think they've got a couple of things wrong, actually. Like, for example, one of the things they said to Indian restaurants that they shouldn't give free poppadoms, like at the beginning of the meal, to stop people eating so much. And I think it's a massive mistake, because everybody knows you get in early doors, you're ravenous. I eat about 16 poppadoms, and then I want to eat a lot less during the meal. I think they should, if anything... You should turn up, and there should be a mountain of poppadoms on the table, and just go fill your boots, mate. And then you won't even be able to finish off a samosa.
If we don't get poppadoms, I won't be able to practice my karate.
Yeah.
So, what do you do on the poppadoms? Because like it's
I'll
difficult.
Go nuts, I hit the whole thing.
But that's the thing, you could do that, but you don't know. You know, when you eat at an Indian restaurant with someone you haven't been to an Indian restaurant with for before. It's very difficult because some people go for they hit the structural nucleus of the stack, and then that causes the rest of the poppadoms to crumble. Some people go for the chop. Mm. I was sat with one guy once who just took them individually.
Yeah. That's the sign of a true sociopath.
I could not
just take a whole poppadom.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I know,
it's such a mistake. I can't believe I'm sitting here with you.
But
I'm sorry, mate, this is over. Right? You've just taken a whole poppadom. Are you mental? What's wrong with you?
Can you imagine the poor little waiter in the Indian restaurant at 11:30 on a Friday night when 20 lagered lads come in having to say, I'm afraid there's no free poppadoms. As the government said, you're overweight.
They should put more vegetables on pizzas. That's what they should do.
I'm a vegan, and my wife is trying to...
Where did you get the energy to have two children?
Well, they're very fair. I'm not sure they're mine. My wife is very excited about the fact that she... Because she's sort of on a fitness kick. So we decided to order a pizza with no cheese on it. So we ordered this pizza, got loads and loads of extra vegetables. What I didn't realise is that cheese not only adds flavour, but also is an adhesive in terms of the ingredients of the pizza. So what actually arrived was some bread with a selection of vegetables in the corner of the box. It was like an IKEA pizza where you had to reassemble yourself once it arrived.
What a lot of people don't realise is that a tomato is not a vegetable. It's a mammal.
Moving on. Advice issued by the Department of Health as part of their Responsibility Deal initiative with the food industry has suggested restaurants reduce portion sizes to encourage healthier eating. Suggestions include cutting an inch off the width of a pizza, scrapping free poppadoms, and using thick-cut chips that absorb less fat. Other suggestions include using grated cheese rather than sliced, single instead of double cream, and fresh chilli instead of cheeseburgers deep-fried in lard. Ramesh, listen to this. I don't know why she's leaving. Ramesh, who abhors them next door?
Well, Yale have done a report saying that one in three of us admit that we don't get on with our neighbours, and one in seven of us dislike our neighbours so much that we've ended up moving house as a result of wanting to avoid them.
Which is ridiculous, because there'll be neighbours where you move.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And apparently there are people with different names who are worse neighbours than other people. Mm. Like, the worst... male names for neighbours are Nathan, Martin, Giles. If you live next door to a Giles, God help you. Zoe, Lauren or Chloe, they're not good to live next door to. Whereas those that are good to live next door to, John, David and Alan, Louise, Katie and Helen.
Katie, so I am an excellent neighbour. I'm pleased to report.
Yeah. It doesn't specify a surname. It may not be you. I'm just saying.
Frankly, if you're living next door to a Nathan and Giles and you can't deal with Nathan and Giles, you need to grow a pair, don't you?
Our neighbours are very difficult because I wanted to excavate our basement to put a swimming pool in there. And the woman in the downstairs flat was livid about this. She opened her front door, let all the water out. I thought, what's the point of overflowing the bath if you can't make a virtue of it, I thought.
We just moved house recently. We haven't had a problem with the neighbours since we put the 10-foot fence up. They come round a lot more than the old people used to. But we put new double glazing in so I can't hear what they're shouting.
That's the excellent thing about barbecues. That's the good thing that the weather's getting warm, because you have barbecues, which means you can have the neighbours round, isn't it, with barbecues? Because friends come in the house... Neighbours stay on the patio. That's the rule, isn't it? You look after cats when we're away, but I don't care whether you live or die. That's kind of our relationship with people who live in our environs by chance.
I love the headline in The Guardian was Neighbour Gripes, or as Dick Van Dyke would say, Neighbour Grapes.
How many times do you have to move house before you realise you're the problem neighbour?
Nine.
Nine?
Nine so far. There's a whole list of gripes. It said the number one gripe is cats doing their business in my garden. If we're going to stifle entrepreneurship by stopping cats doing business, if a cat can't conduct a simple business transaction in your garden, this country is... And number 17 of the top gripes is children bouncing too high on their trampoline. That's a first world problem, isn't it?
We've got a neighbour, right, who because we live on the first floor, and there's a neighbour in the next door downstairs, and she thinks, oh, I mustn't smoke in the house, I should smoke outside. So smoke rises, OK, I've noticed through physics. So she doesn't smoke in her house. Effectively, she smokes in our house.
Our old next-door neighbours, and I really missed them, every Sunday morning, you could set your clock by, it would have such loud, noisy, passionate sex that foxes would knock on the door and say, can you keep that noise down? And you really could, and it would start about, I would say it's like clockwork, but it wasn't. It clearly very passionate. But they could never understand why for 15 years we wouldn't go around for Sunday lunch. Because we know what you were doing up until 11:45 every Sunday.
Were they doing it on the dining table? Was that the problem?
It's funny that I had some neighbours that just would never come round for Sunday lunch.
A survey has found 1 in 3 people do not get on with their neighbours and listed the top most annoying habits. Neighbours allowing cats to defecate in your garden was top of the list. A surprise winner beating encouraging cats to defecate in your pots and pans into second place. Another annoying habit is kids peering over your fence, although that's not as annoying as peers fencing over your kids. 2 points to Romesh. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Sami Zafar, and it's from Cambridge University Graduate Centre. Open 7 days a week, Monday to Friday.
Mr. Ranganathan.
This is sent in from Peter Wimborne. It's for www.rtime.com, dating for people aged 50 plus. Eligibility, you must be at least 18 years of age to access and use the service.
Ms. Brand.
This is sent in by Nathan Med from the Plymouth Herald website. A hole has appeared on Plymouth Hoe. Plymouth City Council are looking into it.
Mr. Day.
James Tamplin has sent in a cutting from the Daily Telegraph sports section. Wigan's Michael McLaurin has been charged by the Rugby Football League after his tackle broke the jaw of Kirk Dixon.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Romesh have got 10 points, but this week's winners are Katie and Kevin with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Daily Telegraph sent in by Mara Muciano.
A caller to the RSPCA said they feared a rat they had found in their kitchen was going to die, only for animal welfare officers to discover that the rodent on the floor was, in fact, an onion.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Romesh Ranganathan, Katie Brand and Kevin Day. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by John Luke Roberts, Andy Walton and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Max Davis, Gráinne Maguire and James Buck. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.